Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, eavesdropper, emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist.
Happy Tuesday, Hank.
Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
I'm not surrounded by the sound of those joyous drums in the studio, but I wish I were. Those are the sound of the joyous drums actually from Washington, D.C., where my daughter Kelly was marching this weekend.
Did you have her capture sound for you?
I did have her capture sound. I'm feeling like such a journalist. And also, I failed myself to capture the sound of the wonderful drums that were following us in San Luis Obispo this weekend. So I'm glad I had some drumming to bring to you today. And, you know, I didn't intend at all to do a follow-up show to the march because we talked about it last week and I asked people why they were marching and what was important to them. And I felt like maybe we had covered, you know, the subject. But then I went to the march on Saturday, which I was really excited about. And I think my experience was similar to many people's experience, that it was just overwhelming. It was overwhelming to be there.
You went to the one in San Luis?
Yes, I did. Okay. Yes, I did. And, you know, it's hard to describe it unless you were there to have that many people. I think the count was anywhere between 7,000 and 10,000 people showed up. The march itself kind of filled the whole downtown corridor. And I saw a picture that showed the marchers filling all of the 12 blocks of downtown. And I know that when the first group finished, the last group hadn't even started. So it was unbelievable. And to be kind of reminded of all of the things that I care about and to be surrounded by people with similar feelings, it just warranted another conversation. And also because the marches were historic, the largest U.S. demonstration, as it's being called, but, you know, we can discuss whether or not this was really a protest or a demonstration or a march for unity. There's different perspectives. I know my daughter Kelly, who is in Washington, has a more of a protest sense of it, a demonstration sense, and a lot of people felt it was more of a unity march, but neither here nor there. This was the largest U.S. gathering in a march in history, and that doesn't even count all of the marches globally. So because it was such a big event, I felt like it needed to be discussed again. And also from this mental health perspective, it felt like it needed to be addressed again. Because I know for myself, you know, the struggles of kind of adjusting to the new normal, whatever that is, and the struggles of kind of accepting that we thought we were going in one direction and we're shifting and moving another direction are challenging. And we've talked a lot about it on the air the last few months, you know, how people are feeling and now the reality is here. And I really recognize that if I'm not taking action of some kind, it's really easy to slip into kind of the sense of despair and the sense of hopelessness. And I really can't afford to get to that place. I don't feel like I can afford to get to that place. In my life, I'm responsible for too many people and too many psyches to allow myself to get tripped up. And so being a good therapist, I know about self-care, and I know that it's important to surround myself and be involved in those things that help buoy my mental health and well-being so that I, in turn, can be in that same space for others. So today we're going to talk about the march. I want to know how it was for you or where you were or what the experience was like. And most importantly, I think the big question everyone has is where do we go from here? Because to be a part of something so historic, so large, so powerful, and it's such a timely and such an important time, where do we go from here? How do we keep that up? I think the other piece of the show today, you know, in all the exuberance I felt coming off of Saturday and connecting with friends and social media and seeing all the pictures and feeling the positivity, was, you know, speaking with a couple of friends, people in my social circle who actually wanted to talk about the march and said, I don't get it. Why did this march happen? Why were people doing this? I don't understand why people are so upset. And it reminded me that we aren't just one huge vast group of like-minded people, that within our own community, within our own social circles, within our own families, we're not all on the same page. And so how do we keep this energy moving forward and not create even a bigger divide, a bigger divisive sense of experiences? So I'm throwing that out there today. And I guess, you know, the whole idea of where do we go from here is important, because it's easy to sing to the choir. You know, I love to come in here every week, and in many ways I'm singing to the choir. Although if I'm not singing to the choir, I encourage those who are singing a different tune to call in and share that. But in a lot of ways, in a lot of respects, you know, working in the public radio station, that we feel like we're singing to the choir. And the challenge really is, how do we get our voice, our choir's voices, out to a larger audience? How do we get that into a bigger a bigger realm? And so, of course, my first thought after Saturday was that instead of cramming everyone into, you know, the same crowded blue state or the crowded blue states and huddling together for comfort, maybe really the most powerful thing we could do is have a mass temporary exodus out of the blue states and into these red states, just long enough, right, to register to vote and to vote in the midterm elections and kind of turn the tide again. Because it's just 2 years we're talking about, and especially if you're young and mobile and there's lots of great things going on in some of these smaller communities all across the country, they're trying to build their own grassroots effort. It's like, why all hide out here when we could go out into the world and do something? And I know that's crazy, and I see you rolling your eyes. But it's not that far off, because numbers are what change things, right? We saw the numbers this weekend. So imagine the numbers of people that flood into the red states instead of out of the red states, how they could turn things around. One of my friends actually is living in Indiana right now, and this is a big change for her coming from California into Indiana, which is Mike Pence's home state and incredibly conservative. And she was posting that she was looking for a carpool to go to the march in Indiana. And what ended up happening in her efforts to connect with her community, I guess they have a community bulletin board or an online, you know, community bulletin board, that her post asking for a ride to the march was flagged as being offensive to other people in the neighborhood, and that she was sent an email asking her to remove her post looking for a ride to the march because it was offensive to other members of their community. And so she was quickly reminded that she was no longer in California and was in a whole different land. But she went to the march, and it said it was super empowering, and there were plenty of people there that felt the way she did. But again, if we had more people moving in. And on a less radical note, you know, if you're not willing to pack up your satchel and spend 2 years living in a hostile environment, the idea of, you know, having our voices heard by sending postcards or calling senators and congressmen and letting them know about the things we care about, I wonder how it would be to send these postcards to the senators in the red states, in the red zones. Even if they're not our elected official, they are all working ostensibly for us, we the people. And so to send those cards and letters to the places where people have been traditionally voting against the things we care about. And instead of being attacking or threatening or, you know, yelling at these red state senators to try to understand that they feel they're doing what's in the best interest of their state and their citizens, but to just kind of call on the humanity of all of us. Are you okay? Just in the cards, are you okay with the direction that we're going, that your party's going? And I just ask of you to please think about your children and grandchildren with each vote that you cast. And that's simple. So those are just a couple things that are going through my mind today. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're always invited to be part of the conversation in different ways. You can give us a call at 805-781-3875. You can find us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can always send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And if you'd like to catch up on previous shows, you can go to kcbx.org under the News Talk tab, and we're right there, and all of our shows are posted. And if you'd like to subscribe and hear the podcasts when you have time, you can visit iTunes and just look up A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist and hit subscribe, and then you'll have all of our shows downloaded to listen to at your convenience. So those are some of my, you know, initial thoughts about what went on Saturday. And the other thing I was thinking about, again, when I was confronted by a couple of friends who were confused as to why this march happened and why it was so big and what people were really asking for, you know, I was thinking about how much easier it is to be cynical than it is to stand up for something and stand by something that you believe in. You know, it's risky to stand up and be vocal. It's risky to have convictions and to speak them and to say them out loud. I think of the Dixie Chicks and how that went for them when they spoke up against George W. Bush, and the price that they paid professionally and personally for that willingness to stand up and be heard. But I think, you know, if there's ever a time to stand up and be vulnerable, to take the risk of being taunted or even bullied, in some ways, I don't know why anyone would ever be willing to stand up and speak what their truth is, and bring upon themselves any kind of criticism, or maybe even put themselves in danger. I mean, I think it takes a hugely courageous person or people to stand up and really be counted for that which they believe in. And I understand the cynic. I have that person, that personality that lives inside of me. It's easy to be cynical and sit back and complain about the problems of the world and point out all of the flaws and the plans and propositions and how to move forward and bring about change. It's really easy to sit back and be an armchair quarterback in all sorts of issues and actually go ahead and belittle the efforts of those that you see as idealists or activists as being misguided and hopeless. But, you know, the cynic risks nothing in life and therefore gets little or nothing back. And I think right now when it comes to our collective and individual mental health and well-being, at least for myself, where I feel like I'm in this space where I either take action or I slip into despair, I guess I'm at that place where I have to risk being vulnerable or being criticized instead of running the risk of just kind of fading into my own disappointment and really wallowing, and then the mental health issues start to perk up or cast their eyes my way. So where are you at today? How has this been for you since Saturday? Did you march? What was your experience like? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. Hi, Colleen, start us off today. What's on your mind?
Hey, Elizabeth. I too participated in the march, and just like you, so proud that my daughter was at Washington and my whole family marched in places all over the country. And one of the things in relate to what you were just saying, women are doers. And maybe part of one of the reasons for the march was to give other women encouragement to become a doer, to write a senator from a different state, which I've already done, to talk, you know, write Tim Kaine and say kudos to you for all your questions of Betsy DeVos, whatever it might be. But I wanted to share with you a post that my daughter posted on Facebook prior to the march, because it was so poignant and it kind of answers your question, why did we march? She is a teacher of adult immigrants to teach them English near Washington, D.C. So this is what she said. So a lot on my mind surrounding the inauguration and the Women's March on D.C. this Saturday and what women's right really means to me and my family. Then I have my job, which I always adore, which is amazing and gives me the opportunity to be extremely culturally sensitive at times. This being said, last night I gained two new female students from Afghanistan who are wives to the same man. With all this hashtag female power and hashtag why I march around me, I think it hit me harder. And we can think what we want around the culture or subject, but the reality is I just care that this family is kind to their neighbor and are raising their children as global citizens. Just like anyone else, I don't really care what they do with their sexuality, spouse, or family. But to me, it's about choice. I can assume that these ladies did not have a choice. We don't see women with multiple husbands, do we? And this, the lack of choice, to me, is the problem. We as women need equal opportunities and, above all, our free will and free choice. I look forward to all that these ladies teach me this quarter and the march on Saturday. And, Elizabeth, you know my daughter. It just was so poignant to me. for her to pose those questions and to be reflecting about the interactions with these women.
Absolutely. And Colleen, thank you for calling in and sharing that. I think that the whole scope of the march and the experience of all the people, it wasn't just a monoculture or a monogender or a mono issue march. And I think that's what was so powerful, is that the women who were the council that put this together were from all sorts of diverse backgrounds. And so it made for an inclusionary march atmosphere. And I love that your daughter is experiencing the world from different lenses and being in Washington and working. So what else is happening now post-March for you? 805-781-3875. While I was at the march on Saturday, I took some time to talk to people that were there and find out what brought them there and what they were excited about. And let's start off, Hank, with number one, Nikki, and what she had to say. All right, so Nikki, your sign says the elephant in the womb, and it's a poster of a woman's womb with a GOP elephant in the middle. What inspired this?
It was something that I saw online, the elephant in the womb, and I just thought it was pretty clever. And it's all anatomically labeled, and then, you know, the elephant is just does not belong, so it does not have a proper label. And so I'm a naturopathic doctor, and I work a lot with women's health, and so it just does not make a lot of sense to me that politicians have a say in our healthcare decisions. That should be a decision made between a woman and her doctor. So,
and so my guess is that you're here primarily walking for women's reproductive rights. Anything else on your agenda for the march?
Oh gosh, we have a big group with us here today. There's a lot focused on women's reproductive rights, but also the environment, climate change, LGBTQIA rights. What other signs do we have? We've got kind of covering a lot. Yeah.
That was the way it was, covering a lot. And I think that's what made it so exciting and also a little overwhelming, is that there are a lot of issues that a lot of us care about. And I think part of the struggle might be, the challenge moving forward, is how do we get focused ourselves on one issue or two that we really care about and stay with that issue? Because I think the challenge is keeping up the momentum, keeping up the enthusiasm, keeping up the commitment towards moving forward in ways that are productive. And we cannot continue just saying I'm disappointed or I'm angry or these things matter. We have to take action on those things that matter. And so what are those things that matter too, and how will we focus our energy and attention? I think that is always a challenge. I think it was a challenge with Occupy Wall Street, that eventually that movement ran into troubles because there wasn't one voice that led their cause. It was many. So where do we go from here? 805-781-3875. Hi, Joe. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Oh, great, Colleen. I'm really happy to have gotten a hold of this radio program. I'm a truck driver.
Yes.
And I'm going from Fresno to Phoenix to deliver some product. But in listening to you, I have a question. How come this man can lie so much and get away with it? And it seems to me like he's not being called out on all of the stuff that he's talking about. And it gets me so riled up. I want to call him personally and give him a piece of my mind, but I don't think that's the right way to do it. What would you recommend?
Joe, thank you for calling. I'm glad you found us also, and stay safe on the road. And, you know, it's interesting because a lot of people are talking about how do you address a bully? Because when someone is, you know, telling a lie that you know is a lie and they're standing by it, you can't attack them back as we've seen, because they just attack back harder. And you can't reason with the person because they turn the reasoning around. I think that's what you're experiencing, right? That frustration of there seems to be no common sense or rationale to the conversation.
Yes. And then the other thing is, why can't we get a coalition of people and turn the Twitter back to him? For example, just the issue of his taxes. Mm-hmm. He says that the people out here aren't interested in his taxes. Well, I think he's got a lot to hide there. And I would like to get people just to tweet to him every day, we want to see the taxes. That's it. And I don't know what it would do, but I think it would finally frustrate him so he'd start responding.
Well, and that's what we hope, right, that there's enough resistance, enough outcry. I think over 200,000 people have already contacted the White House about the tax issue. And on the website, the White House says that if they get 100,000 signatures on a petition, that they would respond. They have over 200,000, and they've yet to really respond in a positive way to the taxes. So like you, Joe, I think you're expressing what a lot of people are feeling and what took them to the streets. And I think, to be honest, I don't know if there's an easy answer. I think we're going to have to figure out how to work with this person who is leading the country, because going right at it, right, with anger is just going to get more anger back. So I don't have an easy answer. But what I can say, if you're feeling these things and you're in that truck and you have a little time, I think you can initiate this and inspire your brotherhood and sisterhood of truckers to take on that one issue. And maybe that's your, every time you take a gas break stop or a bathroom stop, send out those tweets. And at least you'll have done something. And at the end of the day, you can say, I did my thing. And if 150,000 of my friends do that, something will have to change.
Yeah, well, I feel like I need to do something, and I couldn't get to the marches because I have to work.
That's right.
But I'm not just going to sit around and let this man do what he does. I think I have to fight back in some kind of way and make it in a positive way. I don't want to get negative with the guy.
Absolutely.
But let him know that it's not okay for him to sit there and spout all these lies that he makes up. And then he spins it from one moment to the next. He's putting it out the door, you know, and saying, I didn't say that or I didn't do that. I mean, and all through his campaign, we saw it on TV, on national TV. What he was saying and doing was absolutely just wrong. And it is frustrating. But I'm a guy of action. So I got friends in my hometown. We're going to have a meeting on the 27th of January to discuss all of this. And I've gotten we're probably having about 200 people there to talk about this and air it out.
Fantastic. And Joe, if you're driving through again, I hope you let me know how that meeting went, because I think moving forward, we're going to have to kind of come together and share strategies, because I don't think there is one strategy yet. So when you figure that strategy out, I want you to call me back and let me know where it goes. I think Joe is speaking for many people, too. I hear the anger and frustration in his voice. 805-781-3875. And there was a lot of frustration on a lot of different fronts at the march on Saturday. Hank, let's go to number 5 and hear what Jane had to say. Hi, Jane. So what was your first march?
In the late 60s, early 70s against the Vietnam War as a teenager.
And so what motivated you then to get out the door?
I thought the Vietnam War was wrong. I thought we were conducting foreign policy that did more harm than good.
And so what brought you out the door today?
I was appalled to hear President-elect Trump talk about women in such a disrespectful way, and that really bothered me. I don't agree with him on many things, but that particularly was just so offensive. I have a daughter. I'm a woman. I support women and women's rights, and I was just disgusted. I'm here to say I don't want to be talked about that way. I don't want women to be disrespected, and I'm here to say it's not okay.
And so what are your hopes for a gathering in San Luis Obispo? Because we're not really the hotbed of controversy, right? So what do you hope for this kind of community to do?
Well, I'm hopeful that people are awake and paying attention and can respectfully disagree and don't have to be ugly or crude or rude to say we don't like that and to speak up against ugliness in all its forms.
And I think that's one of the things that we're all grappling with is how do we talk about these issues and these things that we care about in such a way that we also don't turn ugly or disrespectful? How do we lift or elevate the conversations that we're having? And this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You're listening to Public Radio KCBX. And today we're talking about the march and the impact post-march. And even though I didn't think I would do a follow-up, the outpouring of support all over the country and around the world requires us to continue having this conversation. Where do we go from here? A lot of people are feeling very passionate about what's happening in the country and, like Joe, feeling frustrated and wondering what do we do next. And so we need to have forums, places to talk about what we are doing next so we can inspire each other and not feel frustrated. And one of the things that I talked about earlier in the summer about the coming revolution, I don't know if I felt this coming or if we all felt this coming, but I interviewed many artists, musicians, about the music that follows a revolution, that every good revolution, every good effort, every good march has some sort of music that inspires it and moves it forward. And, of course, at the march in Washington, D.C., there was drums and music and chants. And, Hank, let's go to number four to hear a little bit of the chanting in Washington, D.C. A lot of passion and a lot of feeling behind what people were out in the street trying to accomplish or what they were trying to say. Genoa, you're on the air. What's on your mind today? Hi.
Yes, hi. I participated in the San Luis Obispo March on Saturday, and I also feel it was a wonderful, amazing experience. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about what I, as a Morro Bay local, am doing, just one little person being the change I want to see in the world. That you've talked about, what I can do to continue the march, so to speak.
Please share.
Well, I teach Spanish, and I teach Spanish to a lot of children. And I was an exchange student to Costa Rica, even though I was born here in San Luis Obispo, and I went to high school here. And, you know, it's so lovely to just be all-inclusive, and because that is a language, let's say, of a people, of Latin people, Latinos that are targeted by the current administration, it just feels really great. I teach my kids that the rainbow has all colors and that we're all inclusive. And I also practice my daily, I practice yoga daily. So I feel like those two things, even teaching the kids Spanish and the all inclusive, and we're saying, you know, I have 3-year-olds saying, what is this Spanish? And I'm able to show them and say, this is another language. And, you know, we can communicate with our brothers and sisters sometimes in something that's not English. It might be Spanish. So I wanted to share the positive vibes and say that each individual definitely has a voice and can continue in our daily life. Like you say, as a therapist, self-care is key. So that's mm-hmm. where I get to yoga. And then sharing something of my God-given talent mm-hmm. and marching on so that I can make a difference just by leading by example. So thanks for having me on the air.
Oh, well said, Genoa. Thank you. And thank you for sharing not just a little bit of yourself, but the whole heart of yourself. And if we were to all stand up in that way, you know, risk the vulnerability, risk the criticism, risk the being poked at, and stand up and be counted, if we can't change things in a global way, we can make things more positive in a small local way, which emanates out. And that's, I think, what a lot of people are feeling and hoping for. Hi, Mickey, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yes, I was involved in the march in San Luis Obispo as well. I'm from San Miguel, California. Mm-hmm. And so I'm at the north end of San Luis Obispo County. And I am also a Catholic. And I wanted to share the reasons for my being there.
Please do.
I don't necessarily feel that the matter dealing with abortion is something that belongs in the sectors of politicians' determinations or in the hands of anyone other than what a woman has to make a decision about for herself, for her health, and for her, the ethics that she believes in, that she has awareness of. That is basically what this should come down to. It is a medical issue, and it is a psychological issue. And it has no place, and it has been thrown around as a kind of a hot potato politically for so many years, and yet it really is significantly not related to anybody else's issue but the issue of that woman and her doctor. And so I was involved in the march for that reason. Even though I have plenty of friends who are Catholics who disagree with this, I understand that this is ultimately, you know, that woman's specific issue. And the other point that I wanted to make is this. There are, in fact, so many issues that are of concern to people. And even if a person disagrees on the subject of the abortion issues, rights or rights being taken away or whatever, there are a myriad of issues about the lies, about the as the previous speaker mentioned, this terrible defamation of individuals and people by name calling and all these other kinds of activities that are going on vocally, and how the press are being treated, how the Native Americans are being treated and are going to be treated in this country as if another war is being waged against them. Mm-hmm. If we don't use our sense of morality about those issues to argue our point, then we're off base, I think. This is a moral issue, and we're fighting against a very immoral, a very illegal, constitutionally illegal placement of Donald Trump in the position of presidency.
I appreciate you speaking your truth and taking the time to share it with us today. Thank you. This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're listening to Public Radio KCBX. And we're talking about the march and the impact it's had on your life and the impact on our lives as we go forward. And I want to return to the music from the march on Saturday. And this is Inga Swearingen kind of bringing the group together on Saturday.
Listen as your day unfolds, challenge what the future holds, try and keep your head up to the sky. Others, they may cause you tears, go ahead, release your fears, stand up and be counted, don't be ashamed to cry. You gotta be bad, you gotta be bold, you gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard, you gotta be tough, you gotta be stronger. You gotta be cool, you gotta be calm, you gotta stay together. All I know, love will save the day.
You gotta be Inga Swearingen singing to the crowds in San Luis Obispo on Saturday. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. Hi, Becky. Thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just wanted to say I was so inspired by the march, and it feels so good to be surrounded by like-minded people with such a beautiful common goal. And what I'm doing is I'm following along with or taking the lead of the DC Women's March organizers. Mm-hmm. They have the 10 acts in the first 100 days.
Yes.
And so each act I want to fulfill as best I can. So the first is to fill out a postcard for your senators within your state or other senators in the country. And I've printed out, they had a template, and I printed out 400, and I'm going to be, and I have stamps and pens and everything, and I'm ready. I'm going to be in front of Sunshine Health Foods in Morro Bay tomorrow from 10:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. So anyone and everyone who comes by can fill out a postcard, and I'm going to take them straight to the post office right after. So, and each action that comes up, I want to just do everything and or do my best to fulfill it. And I know there's someone else in San Luis who's going to be doing the same thing. I don't know the details of it. Maybe there's a Facebook post out there. I'm not on Facebook, but that would be detailing that. But I just wanted to get that word out and just I have faith that other people are as inspired as I am. So
absolutely. Thank you. And I thank you for bringing up the Women's March. Womensmarch.com, if you're interested in some ideas of how we move forward. They have proposed 10 actions in 100 days. And if you get on their email list, they're going to actually send you each of the 10 actions. And I've got my postcards also that I'm looking at. So thank you for the reminder about how we can move forward. Because that was the question I posed today. It's one thing to be living in the glow of Saturday, which is an incredible glow. to have been a part of it and to look at the pictures of it. And I cried my way through all of the images in the New York Times of the marches all over the globe. And then we wake up Monday morning, Tuesday morning. How do we move forward? Where do we go from here? Hi, Camille. Thanks for taking the time to call. What's on your mind?
Hi. You know, thank you for doing this show today. I'm actually calling from Portland, Oregon. And I think the subject of how we can move forward is one that we really discussed as the group of women that went down to the march together. It's like, okay, so here we are at the march. Now what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
What do we do to actually create action, change? You know, how can we network together? So I had listened to Michael Moore earlier that morning speaking in Washington, D.C., and he had talked about forming a group of, you know, like a response group that five or six of you or nine of you have one person that's in charge and sends a text out when there's an issue that needs to be responded to or a bill that's being presented or, you know, an issue in government that needs to be dealt with. So
kind of using the tools of technology in our favor instead of against us.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's about
and Camille, how
it'd be
was
nice to change the tide of that?
Absolutely. And how
so
was the Portland
it can
march?
Be
I'm sorry.
A positive tool.
Yes, I kept interrupting. I'm sorry.
That's
how was the Portland march? So, what was it like to be there on the ground?
Oh, it was inspiring and empowering. There were over 100,000 people at the march, and as we came into downtown where the marches is on the waterfront, and there are two bridges that flank the area where the march was, and people were streaming across the bridge for like an hour. Mm. It was a nonstop parade of people coming across the bridge, and you know, it was the most peaceful, unifying, hopeful experience. And the generosity that everybody was expressing and the diverse reasons that people were there.
Absolutely.
You know?
Well, I appreciate you calling down from Portland, and I know you got bugged by your sister a little bit to make the call, so I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I appreciate you taking these actions. It's a great idea, these small circles of action. Actually, I first read about this with Jean Shinoda Boland's work with the Million Circles of Women, and I love that Michael Moore is talking about how we get these circles together just with our technology. You know, we all are busy, but if we can tweet to each other or send out text actions, we can all get on it, because I think in some way it's going to have to be sheer numbers that move us forward. And let's take a moment to go back to the march on Saturday in San Luis Obispo and hear some more from the people that were there. Hank, do we have number 7 ready to go?
I've been marching for peace, basically, with Code Pink, but my first major march was when George W. Bush did the shock and awe, and we were up in San Francisco, and it was the most peaceful march I've been on. But this is fantastic to see this kind of turnout in San Luis Obispo.
So what are your hopes for this gathering of women of all ages and backgrounds?
To keep strong and to affect the federal government. If anything, it comes down the tubes that it's not right, like stopping abortions. I mean, we do not want to go backward.
And, you know, it was fun talking to the veterans of the protests.
So this is your first march.
It was fun talking to the veterans of protests from the 60s and the 70s and to hear their take on it. And it was kind of universal, this experience, that this was a positive gathering of people, that it felt really empowering, that it felt like we were moving forward. But it was also interesting to get the take of the younger generation, the millennials. So I sought out a group of younger women who were really enthusiastic. I think they're number 8, Hank. And this is what the millennials had to say about
this. So is this your first march?
Here, yes, and specifically for women's rights, yep. I'm from New York. The last thing I was really involved in was Occupy Wall Street.
And so how does this compare to that experience, and what do you hope is going to happen?
It feels more inclusive, more friendly, honestly, than OWS did. But I just hope that our turnout in numbers will show the President Trump that, you know, a majority of the country did not vote for him, and we're not just going to go along for the ride.
Yeah. What are your hopes for this community?
Just that we concentrate locally. I think much like a lot of issues, local concentration is the most important. So we concentrate on funding Planned Parenthood, and RISE is a big thing that we need to make sure is well funded. They serve many women in this community, and I think we just need to volunteer, donate, show up, go out, and just be seen.
In your generation, so you're kind of the millennials here, yeah. Millennial representation. So tell me your name.
Abby.
So Abby, are you local?
Yeah, I am. I am. I'm here from SLO. I actually moved from Atlanta about a year ago.
Okay, you did.
Yeah.
All right, so one, what brought you here and to San Luis Obispo in general, and what are your hopes for the march?
Moved out here for a job, and my boyfriend and I wanted a change of pace. Coming from the South, we really love the progressive kind of political environment of California, and so it just really fits in with our whole lifestyle. And came out here today to support women and everyone in general. I mean, our rights, everyone's rights, their human rights.
So what are your concerns for the next 4 years? I mean, you're young. What does this mean for your future?
It makes me nervous, to be honest, thinking about the next 4 years. You know, I'm at a point in my life where I'm thinking about buying a house and settling down roots eventually and family and thinking about raising another future generation. And it's kind of scary to think about the world we live in where my rights might not be protected, rights of immigrants might not be protected. We might not have access to clean energy sources. I work in the clean energy industry. I work for a solar company. And so thinking about my job, my livelihood might be put at risk. It keeps me up at night, you know. It makes me feel uneasy.
And so read your sign for us.
My sign says, if I make my uterus a corporation, will y'all stop regulating it? yeah, pretty much says it all right there.
Love the handmade signs. Thank you.
You know, the signs were incredible. If you get a chance to look online, the creativity of people, I just loved seeing where people, because I wasn't a sign maker, so a little part of me hanging back, much more comfortable with the microphone, asking questions. But I admire the people that had the signs and had them right out there and were willing to make their positions known. So we're talking today about post-March experiences. Where do we go from here? What are you doing? What actions are you taking? How will we keep this momentum up? How do we keep the resolve? How do we work with the frustration and anger that you can hear in so many people's voices about the potential direction of our country? If we're not going to just sit at home and yell at our screens, whatever that screen is, what kind of tangible things can we do as we move forward? We talked about, the 10 actions in 100 days and writing the letters and writing postcards. I know that the womensmarch.com group is also in the process of training 500 women to run for office around the country. How powerful would that be? You know, and I suggested before, a little half jokingly, but to the young millennials who, might be struggling to buy a house or settle in California, what if all these millennials moved into those red states and brought that energy and passion there and changed the landscape in that way? I mean, I think we're looking at a time where it takes bold action, something beyond our own comfort zone. And start small. If you're out of your comfort zone is actually making a call to the senator's phone and leaving a message, that's a great first step. Each one of those little steps will move you in a direction towards bigger actions. We're not expecting you to run for office if you've never written a postcard to a senator. So start small. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation today. We are talking about the march and where we go from here. You can also be part of the conversation on my Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can leave comments there. You can always send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And you can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. All the shows are online. Or you can subscribe if you're on the road driving a truck and you need company. You can subscribe to the podcast by going to iTunes and looking up A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist, and you can download all the previous shows there. There was so much energy at the march in San Luis Obispo, so much energy in Washington, D.C. As I mentioned, my daughter Kelly was there, and then friends of hers started posting pictures. It was amazing how many people made the journey from California and all over the country to be there. And I was thankful to my daughter for kind of sending back some of the chants and voices that she heard throughout the day. Let's hear what number 11, what they had to say.
Tell me what do I feel like?
You know, as I mentioned earlier, I was questioned by some friends in my social circle about the march, who saw that my daughter had marched in Washington and my other daughter had marched in Pacifica and friends had marched in Portland and Denver and San Diego. You were all there. You have friends that marched all over. But for my friends who didn't participate and didn't understand why the demonstrations or protests or even the March of Unity would happen, what kind of rights people felt like they weren't getting, and their dismay that this felt like an angry outlash, all I kept thinking was this chant of this is what democracy looks like. And this is what it looks like, is having your voice be heard, having your say, standing up for your convictions, not being afraid to have your point of view and your beliefs be heard, to speak out, even if it's controversial within your social group, because it's not a time to be shy. It's a time to be heard. 805-781-3875. Bill, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was at the parade, and I was impressed with the numbers in spite of the rain. And I was speaking of signs. I almost made a sign that said advocating fascism. And what I was going to say was, on the top of the sign, it would have been strength through unity, and on the bottom said become a fascist. And what I meant by that, and I didn't think many people would get it, but individually as twigs, we're going to be broken one at a time. But if we join each other and be wrapped up like Mussolini's fascists, we have some strength.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point.
And, you know, and we shouldn't let the fascists, you know, steal the language.
Well, and it's interesting because Newt Gingrich actually came out on Fox News in response to Madonna's speech at the Washington March and called her a fascist.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, so you're on the right track with that, to kind of keep the language where it should be.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about, though, was the truck driver was complaining about the lack of shame, and I wanted to bring up the idea that when McCarthy was accusing Eisenhower of being a communist, a general said, "Sir, have you no shame?" And that pretty much brought an end to his tirade. But nowadays, I don't think there is such a thing as shame.
Well,
could you address that as a therapist?
Well, and I'll talk a little bit about it, Bill. I don't know if I have. Maybe we need to do a whole show on that, because actually it's a bigger topic than, you know, 5 minutes. Because there has been a lot of talk within the professional community about how the social norms have changed, the social norms and expectations for decorum or how people speak with each other, and things like guilt or shame have in some ways been completely altered. You know, in the olden days, you kind of kept your children, your family in check by the fear of what the neighbors would think, right? A little bit of shame, a little bit of guilt or fear of being judged. But a lot of that has been pushed away. And in some ways, you know, being the source of shame or outrageousness has become a badge of honor. And I think we're going to see that more and more, because those who are most outrageous tend to get the most attention. But I think your point is valid, and it's something that we'll be looking into more as the next 4 years unfold, because we are seeing unprecedented changes in the way that we interact with each other that are seemingly unchecked. So what may be good for the government or those in power, we may be seeing as good for those on the playground or those in corporations or those in their families. You know, how we interact with each other could be forever altered. 805-781-3875, another voice from the march on Saturday. Number three, Hank.
My name is Glenda Griffith. I'm from Cambria.
And what brought you to the march today?
Women. Women, rights, Gaia, the Mother Earth. I just want to see someone that we all don't want to hate. We want to send him all the love we can and dissolve him.
And is this
like
your first march?
Which he might melt.
Is this your first march?
No, I've been an activist for 45 years.
Okay. And so how is this different or the same as other experiences you've had?
Well, this being, I think, it's wonderful to see so many people. The last big march I was at was Diablo Canyon, and I marched during Vietnam. I've been in a lot of marches. But this has such a good feeling of love, not hate. That's what we got to put out there.
And it's interesting because talking to the veterans of many marches, I realize how many things we've needed to stand up for just locally in the last 30 years, that there have been issues that have come up that we've needed to stand up and speak out against. And this idea of speaking with love and not hate to try to, you know, come up against force with just quiet resolve, will it bring us where we need to be? I mean, is it the cynic in me? I don't know if it's the cynic in me or the skeptic in me that wonders if we haven't gotten to a point that we might not be able to just do this peacefully, that we may need to bring power to power. And I'm not sure what that looks like. And it scares me a little bit to even think that. But to hear the resolve of those who had been in many marches before, I think was encouraging and a reminder that we can never rest as citizens, that there's always something that we need to stand up for. And also a reminder that, you know, the suffragist movement, the fight for the right to vote for women took 80 years. It was not a 1 year or 4 year or one term experience or demonstration or protest. It was 80 years and multiple generations of women. And I think that may be where we're going. Is it Lena?
Yes.
Hi, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I was at the march at SLO, and I must admit, it was my first march, and I really had a great experience. In keeping with something actually you just said, I think that for us, part of what needs to alter a little bit is our language and our approach, because powerful action doesn't necessarily mean we're fighting. Mm-hmm. When I was taking martial arts, one of the things that we learned was not to be there. It was basically just let somebody put all their energy into fighting us and just get out of the way. And my thought was, what if we were on a grassroots level, we're so focused on building community among everybody, finding all of our common ground, and focus more on finding that common ground and building up that sense of sameness amongst ourselves, because that in itself is powerful, very scary action to look somebody in the eye and say, these are the things that we have in common, despite the fact that these are the things we don't have in common. And it would give us a chance to powerfully move forward and actually change the conversation. Instead of it being about fighting and resisting, have it be about flowing and working together.
I love that, Lena. Thank you for sharing that perspective. And I think, again, we have to put all of these strategies out there to see which ones are going to work, because I don't think we're in unprecedented territory. So there's not one form of protest or resistance that we know is going to work. We're going to have to try them all out. And let's finish up with one of my last conversations I had downtown with some seasoned veterans. Number 10, Hank.
Is this your first march?
No, it's not.
And so what got you started in the marching movement world?
I just want to make a difference and not be frustrated in my own mind, but to get out there and even on a small scale to make some, hopefully, some change.
And so what are your hopes for this gathering of people? Because this is a huge crowd for San Luis Obispo.
I think to empower us locally, to realize that we can make a difference globally, and just small steps towards the bigger picture.
Absolutely, I love that. Do you mind?
Not at all.
Okay, tell me your name.
My name is Quinn Plante. I started marching in the 60s, and then it seemed like things were okay until probably 2000. Started marching again there. Went to San Francisco. I've done several here. You know, what I hope is, well, yeah, I don't know. Feeling pretty hopeless right now, you know. But it's really great to see San Luis out here.
Wait, so tell me, though, Quinn, when you started marching the first time in the 60s, what got you out the door for that?
Vietnam. I mean, that was, you know, I think it was Vietnam, and then 64, 65, all that civil rights stuff. I mean, it was just, yeah. I thought we had made a lot of progress, and now it looks like we're heading backwards.
But do we, you know, it seems like history is not linear, that it's cyclical, right? That we have to go back and revisit the fights.
Yes.
So do our millennials have what you had in the 60s to keep that energy moving?
I don't know. You know, those iPhones take up a lot of attention and isolate a lot of, I mean, can you imagine a march where people are just texting each other?
I appreciate
it. Hopefully, but I'm glad. You know, it looks like there are a lot of young people out here. Yeah. So I'm glad for that.
And maybe ultimately it's the job of the elders to model for the next generation the resolve of moving forward, because there was so much enthusiasm in every age group on Saturday all over the country and all over the world that you can't help but feel like something is happening. But we have to figure out a way to move forward and not get discouraged or frustrated. And so that opens up the conversation to continue. And as always, I appreciate you being a part of the conversation. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and I appreciate you supporting Public Radio KCBX. If I didn't get to hear from you today, please join us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast through iTunes. And I look forward to continuing this conversation. I know this will not be the last time we speak about marching, resistance, and moving forward.
Challenge what the future holds. Try and keep your head up to the sky. Lovers, they may cause you tears. Go ahead, release your fears. Stand up and be counted. Don't be ashamed to cry. You gotta be bad. You gotta be bold. You gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard. You gotta be tough. You gotta be stronger. Together. All I know, love will save the day. Herald what your mother said, read the books your father read, try to solve the puzzles in your own sweet time. Some may have more cash than you, others take a different view. Your day unfolds, challenge what the future holds, try to keep your head up to the sky. Lovers, they may cause you tears, go ahead, release your fears. My, oh my, eh, eh, eh. You gotta be bad, you gotta be bold, you gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard, you gotta be tough, you gotta be stronger.